Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I'm really excited to have on the show Chris Hill from CB Hill Guitars. I've seen these guitars before when my other guests here, Les and Ron, had come by and did a show, and they brought one of the guitars over here, and they're just amazing instruments. They're made here locally in Huntington Beach, and we're going to go through some of the different guitars. He brought some different models in, and also Ron Eshte brought in a new one that he has, his new guitar, which is really, really, really beautiful. So I want to introduce CB Hill, and we're going to talk a little bit about his background, but he worked at I remember this place, World of Strings, and also Rocket Music, and studied under Tom Rebecca, if I'm right, his name, and started making his own guitars. And he, besides still doing repairs, and he builds guitars, and there's some amazing instruments, beautiful instruments, great woods, and a great sound, which you'll hear in a minute. And then also, too, joining me, they've both been on the show before. First, Les Wise, who's been on several times on this show and the Flow Guitar, and Ron Eshte, he was on the Flow Guitar. So it's great to have you guys back. Welcome to the show, and Chris, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
So real quick, let's go talk a little bit about your background, how you got into this, because I noticed in your bio, you mentioned you were in the aerospace industry, and I'm curious, when you're explaining your background, how much that influenced your design of the guitars?
I'm not sure that influenced much of what I was doing with guitars. I began building guitars while I was working in aerospace, but it was mainly just as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been interested in guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And began at an early age tinkering and taking things apart, putting them back together, and that flowed over to guitar as well.
Well, one of the things I was curious about is in aerospace, you guys work with some interesting metals, light and strong, and I'm just curious that influenced some of the parts. Because I noticed, we're going to talk about this too, on your tailpiece, you have a piece of fret wire in the tailpiece, which is very unusual. And
yes.
I want to know why you do that. What's the significance of that?
Well, the practical purpose is to ground the strings.
Oh.
I run a piece of wire underneath the fret itself, and that piece of wire goes underneath the tailpiece to the cable, which connects to the end pin,
mm-hmm.
and takes care of the grounding issue. But at the same time, tuning the string behind the bridge helps with the overall tone of the instrument and the ring of the strings.
Okay. Does it help the sustain?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes, it does. And I learned that from John Peterson at the World of Strings, because all of the Arco instruments, if you notice, have some kind of fret on the tailpiece. And the way it was explained to me is that you can tune the tailpiece so that the ring of the tailpiece doesn't interfere with the ring of the string.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So it actually can cancel.
Yeah. If you listen to the big heavy metal tail pieces, like on an L5 or something like that, a lot of people complain about the ring that you hear from that tail piece. And this kind of eliminates that.
I mean, I've heard it acoustically. Now, on my jazz guitar, I have a Bigsby on it, so it kind of muffles it out because it's just a big slab. But I could, that metal is pretty. It does resonate. So, but the L5 type tailpiece floats, and it's not on the surface of the guitar, so it's kind of hanging there. And I can see it does vibrate. I know they're very loud when I played them acoustically without the amp. They're pretty resonant. That's interesting. Now, another question, real quick, since you have that fret on the tailpiece, any advantage? I know you don't have it on your guitars, but the zero fret, is there really any advantage of that, or have you experimented with that? Which would be the same thing. You have a fret on the, you have a zero fret, and then the nut behind it.
Yeah, I've never built a guitar with a zero fret. I've, of course, you know, doing repairs for as many years, I've seen a lot of zero fret guitars. I don't really see an advantage to that. I like having a nut that you can kind of control the string length with a nut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was just curious, because that would be on both ends all the way, metal all the way down the line.
Yeah.
Well, let's go through a little bit of these guitars, and then I want to talk a little bit about the 7-string, which you made for Ron and the construction. But let's just briefly go through. You make archtop guitars, acoustic archtops. Then you have electric guitars that are both solid or semi-hollow, and then we'll talk about Ron's guitar. Can you kind of just briefly go through them a little bit so everybody's familiar with the models?
All right. Well, the original solid body that I make, I call it a Speedster, and it's based on a Telecaster or a Stratocaster type of guitar with a bolt-on neck, making it something that's easy to work on. Leo Fender was a genius when it came to sub-assembly type guitars, which when you look at it, a Strat or a Telecaster is a sub-assembly type guitar.
And those are bolt-ons.
Yeah, they're bolt-ons. His whole idea was to be able to replace the neck or repair the neck off of the guitar, which really does make it a lot easier to work on. And then set neck designs like the one that Les is holding, that's a custom made. That was a collaboration between myself and the customer that wanted it built, Chris Behrens, and it's based. It's a cross between like a Fender and a Rickenbacker. It's a semi hollow instrument, but it's got a neck through, and it has the Rick style of headstock on it.
Yeah, except yours is slotted straight through, so it's a lot easier to string.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we were talking about before the show. The Rickenbacker was solid in the back, so the side slot that looks like a classical guitar type, they have both for the 12 string. Trying to get that through to thread the string was like forever. This thing's open, so it's easier to slot through. And I noticed too that you use a lot of different woods. What I know, this is a tough question because a lot of it depends on the type of guitar and stuff. But using ash or using mahogany, alder, can you kind of give me a nutshell summation of what your opinion is of the different woods and what they're good for?
Sure. I like lightweight ash for single coil guitars, like Telecaster Strat type of guitars. The lighter the guitar, I think they resonate better. The heavier woods like alder, I like to use it if I'm going to route the guitar out for a tremolo, because that takes a lot of the mass out of the guitar. And so the alder makes up for that loss of mass. Mahogany is a beautiful wood. It's just getting harder to get in nice pieces, such as on these two. This is really nice straight grain mahogany, that Honduran mahogany, which is tougher to get nowadays.
Because we noticed that when in our early days with Fenders and stuff, and also we were talking also too before the show, modifying guitars. We used to modify our older guitars, and one of the things we discovered, Aldern Maple, like on a Strat, was like the best sound. It got to me, it got that best kind of chimey type of sound. Mm-hmm. And you use a lot of different configurations, like a similar to a Tele type pickup configuration on your guitars. And this baritone guitar has TV Jones, so it's like a Gretsch. And then you have like a Strat configuration and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the do you make your own pickups on some of the models, or you basically pull what the artist wants?
I've just started making my own pickups, so that's still more of a hobby than anything else.
Oh, okay.
It's rather frustrating to make pickups if you don't do it all the time. I have a lot of respect for pickup winders, pickup mm-hmm. makers, because boy, they really do have a lot of patience. They really do. Yeah.
So, okay, getting back to the other model, so you have the, we talked about the Speedster, then there is the Surfmaster.
Similar to the Speedster, except that it's got a new headstock, which is an inline headstock, and a larger pick guard with a control configuration that's different than a Telecaster or mm-hmm. the Speedster. Yeah.
And then there's the 251. Now, what does that mean?
Well, the 251 is the Jazz Turnaround, and that name was suggested by a friend of mine, Jim Fisk, in Long Beach. He wanted me to make him a semi-hollow guitar that looked like an L5, but acted like an electric guitar, and that's where the first 251 came from, and the name was suggested by Jim.
Well, what is that? What does 251 mean?
It's the Roman numeral 2 for the minor second.
Oh, okay.
The 5.
Oh, okay. 251, the chord progression.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's always something simple.
That's all right.
Like, there's some secret. I'm like, there must be
to
some
everyone.
Secret.
The
we'll
secret of the guitar.
Call him.
Call him. Well, that's interesting. And then you make a...
from USC.
Yeah. I know 251 really well.
That was his parking space on the other side of the university.
That was actually the number of the classroom that I used to go for music.
Oh, there you go.
But that makes perfect sense. Okay, I get it. And now the 251, or like what Ron has, is basically a hybrid jazz, like a hybrid arch top.
Yes.
Semi hollow, like
it's a semi hollow electric guitar
because it's thinner. It's a thinner guitar.
Yes.
Okay. And then you have this other one called the CB Junior. What's that one about?
That's just my take on the Junior. Single pickup, solid mahogany, set neck, mahogany neck, rosewood fingerboard. And I actually made that one with the first P90 pickup that I wound.
Oh, okay. Solid mahogany neck and body?
Yes.
And then that's a single... Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like a Les Paul Junior.
Junior, yes.
Okay. Single P90. Okay, I'm taking notes as we talk. Okay, and then, well, let's talk a little bit. You brought one of the acoustic guitars. I think it's that's a Clipper?
Yes.
Now, you have the Corvette, the Clipper, and the Regatta. And the Corvette, as I understand, is the 15-inch. The Clipper is a 16-inch body.
Yes.
And the Regatta, 17-inch.
Yes.
And what Les had mentioned, there was significance by the name Corvette.
Yeah, Corvette. Explain to him a little bit about your choice of names.
Well, all of the names of my archtops are nautical names. And the Corvette is a small, light, fast attack ship from the Spanish mm-hmm. Fleet days back in the 16th, 17th century.
Oh, okay.
So that's
very
I
cool.
Came up with the name Corvette. Yeah.
Now the Clipper that you have here, and I'm just curious. This one has a piezo pickup in the bridge.
Yes.
And it has some special circuitry on the back. Does that come, is that only with the Clipper, or does that come on in the other guitars too?
Well, all of my guitars are custom made. Everything I make is one off.
Okay.
And this just happened to be an order from a customer who wanted this McClish hex pickup system in it. so that he could control his MIDI setup with it.
So that's okay. So that's McClish.
McClish, yeah.
Hex pickup. Yeah. Okay. So he can use that for like a synth setup, right?
Yes.
It's polyphonic, right?
Yes.
Okay. So on the side of it, you have a multi-pin.
Yes.
And then that's just the battery.
And that's the battery box.
And this is all active, right? The pickups are active?
The piezo element and the hex pickups themselves are active.
Okay.
The pickups are passive. The magnetic pickups are passive.
Okay. And then where do you plug in to get the regular pickups? Is that in the... It's in the...
Through the back here.
The back, the...
N-pin jack.
The N-pin jack. Okay.
That's and they can be combined.
Okay. And you have... Volume and tone, I presume, for each of the regular pickups or no?
You have volume and tone here. You have volume for the piezo element, and you have volume for the 13-pin out, the poly pickups.
Okay.
And then you have your trigger here to go up and down on your synthesizer to pick your patch, to pick what it is that you're...
Oh, okay.
Scrolling
so that's
through.
Switch.
You can scroll. Yeah, you can scroll.
Okay, the and then what's the other one? Just for the pickup switches between
this is between magnetic and the poly pickup, or a combination of the two.
Okay.
And then here's your pickup selector.
Okay. So if you that one that switches between the piezo and the standard pickups, you can put it in the middle, so you have both.
Yes.
Right. So you can have that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very, very cool. And then you were explaining a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about these guitars have a solid block. Well, it's not quite of a block, if you can explain it. How you have, there's wood under where the pickups are, and there's wood under where the bridge.
Yeah, there's a block like a 335 has in it. And this guitar was made for an individual who wanted a 335 style of guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've made this style before for other students of Ronnie's. This was essentially patterned after a guitar that Ronnie owned.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, was that the one that you owned, Ron, was that that was a six string that you had back then, or was it a seven?
No, it was still a seven.
It was still a seven string?
I've been playing seven for a very long time.
Yeah.
But you had a seven string that was a bigger body like that?
Well, no, I think it was basically that. That's 2 1/4, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
That's what I had.
Oh, okay,
that's
but I mean, was
one.
That, it was a 16-inch,
yeah,
16-inch.
16-inch.
Because your new one's a smaller body.
It's I'm getting older.
Getting older.
Yeah. I get older every 10 years or so. My guitar gets smaller as I get older.
Now, besides the body, the change in the body of his new guitar, and this is actually a newer one that he has. He brought another 7-string that he had before. But from the early guitar that he had like that, what are the differences? What did you change from his original one that was like...
Plenty.
Yeah, mainly it's the body size. The one that Ron has now, the 251, is a carved top and back, whereas these are laminate. These are made out of laminated plates, the clipper.
And advantages, disadvantages of the laminate?
Advantages, it's easy to work with, and they're inexpensive compared to the solid woods. The reason the 251 is carved is because it is a smaller guitar. It's only 14.5 inches across the lower bout.
Mm-hmm.
And the back being solid mahogany that's been chambered, and then the top being a solid maple, and then it's chambered from the inside as well.
Oh, okay. So that's that solid slab that's in his new guitar,
mm-hmm.
That's mahogany. It's just the mahogany. You chambered it, but it's that same.
Yes.
The block is there, but instead of like a Gibson would make, where they'd have a block of maple,
right.
Separate wood,
right.
It's part of the original body.
Yes.
You know, I want to ask a question, CB, about the radius of your necks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's unusual when I play that 251. So, in this case of Ronnie, who has specialized the way he wants the radius of the necks compared to the original ones you did. So, how do you look at that with the radiuses, and what do you...
Well, I always make a compound radius. It comes from the days of working with John Peterson at the World of Strings.
Uh-huh.
You know, I use a hand plane and that type of thing to set up the radius of the fingerboard.
I got you.
And usually they start at 7 1/4 at the nut.
Like a Telecaster.
Like a vintage Telecaster.
I got you.
But then they run out to about 14 to 16 at the bridge.
Wow. Yeah. And that's where it gets, where it's so easy to play way up there.
Yeah, and you can set the action very low that way as well, without it fretting out if you do bending. Ron, of course, doesn't do any bending, but...
Now, how does that change doing
this? Once a year, I bend it,
no. You bend it once a year. Now, how does that change with the 7-string? Now, he's using a 7-string, so...
It remains the same.
It's still the same.
It's still the same. That guitar that he's holding right there is a 7 1/4 at the nut. And about a 16 at the bridge.
Okay. Well, speaking of 7-strings, what were the difficulties doing in terms of construction?
More wood.
Okay.
wider more fingerboard, wood. A bigger block for the to start the carving of the neck. Mm-hmm. Other than that, the parameters, everything matches up okay. The bridge matches up nicely on the body. The tailpiece, of course, is wider because it's a 7-string tailpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you something with your truss rod. Do you use one that goes in both directions?
Opposed to
the old ones where we crank them down and then hope it works. Yeah,
these truss rods have a zero point in the middle, and then you can move the neck whichever direction you need to.
Well, now, I know you've showed me one of those before, but it's interesting because they look like they're two truss rods, but they aren't. It's just
it's over on two.
Can you explain? Because there's no... Is there... Flip his guitar.
Yeah.
So you have adjustment in the front and under the body at the same... You have two adjustments?
No, there's just one adjustment on the front, and it's a compound truss rod that just depending on the direction that you turn the screw... It will either tighten the truss rod in one direction or tighten it the other direction. So you can actually induce back set if you need to.
But what's the difference between that and than a traditional one?
Well, a traditional truss rod is a single rod that's set in a channel that's cut at an angle to the neck.
Right. Yeah. So it's like a bow almost.
Yeah. This one is what I call a zero point, or there's just a straight channel in the neck. So when everything's glued up, it's in a neutral position.
So when you turn it, how does it bend it?
One rod pulls against the other, depending on the direction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's one nut, but there's two rods.
Yeah, and when you see it, he showed it to me, and I go, oh, two truss rods. He goes, no, it's one, and you're right. It just moves like that, like a suspension bridge almost. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, okay.
Yeah, there's a fixed nut on one end, two rods, and then the one rod is threaded.
Okay.
So it pushes or pulls against the other rod.
Well, when you first showed it to me, which was maybe like 6 or 7 months ago, I've never even seen anything like that. You know,
no, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's available.
And they never hang up or anything, do they?
Yeah. I haven't had any failure yet.
Yeah. And
if it's real wood or not.
No, and you can get a
knock on mine.
You can get a really precise, right? You can get it real. It seems like it would be more fine-tuned than a traditional truss rod, the truss one, because you're basically applying stress to get it, as you tighten it, it straightens it, which bends it.
Oh, yeah, I know. And you know how uncomfortable that is all the years when you're adjusting the neck and you kind of feel it tense up a little bit. Or they get stuck all together, or they completely break off. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've had that happen. Yeah, that's not
sure.
Fun. But the... no, and then also, too, have you had any with... Well, most of the woods that you're using, like the maple and stuff, are pretty stable. But have you had any issues when people use, heavy bottom light strings of it twisting?
No.
Okay, so they're
actually,
pretty...
Actually, that's what I use myself. And my guitar that I built for myself has no truss rod in it.
Really?
Yeah.
And what's the neck made out of?
A maple, one piece of maple.
Really? Yeah. And it doesn't...
Doesn't move.
And what's the gauge?
10 to 52.
Oh, that's not too bad. That's not super light, but it's not too bad.
But you know, it's a nice thing with the neck he has on. It's a Louisville Slugger. It's about 3.5 inches across.
Oh, really?
That is true.
Yeah,
it is. Earlier you were talking about
like
slim
this,
necks. And
you know?
Yeah, give it to me. I'll fix it.
Yeah.
Put my cables. I'll put some cables on it.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, though, that it doesn't... Because, I mean, that was a problem with even the early... We were talking about the early Gibson necks, which were really thin and great to play, but they, especially when people started messing around with those heavy bottom, skinny, slinky tops, it would start twisting. and it caused a lot of issues and stuff. Yeah. I've had only one guitar where it started tilting a little bit, but I changed the gauge and it actually straightened out.
Oh, so you didn't have to have the fingerboard removed or anything?
No, I was able to, but it was just starting to. It was one of the, actually it was one of the, yeah, one of the Gibsons was acting up a little bit, but I was able, but I use a more rounded, I use 10s to 46, I think, the Fender 150Ls, yeah, the lights. Yeah. And that's a pretty balanced set. It's not too heavy on the bottom. A lot of guys, when they were playing rock and they wanted that chunk, they would use the heavier ones, like a 50 or something like that on the bottom string with nines up on the top, and it tended, yeah, to twist it a little,
yeah,
bit. Well, let's take a look at, Ron, I want you to play a little bit of this new guitar. Yeah. And it's basically the same model, or is it, what did you do differently on this guitar from his original one?
Well, this is the same one. Hang on a second. I got to deal with this, man.
It's essentially the same guitar, the same woods, mahogany back and sides,
mm-hmm,
mahogany neck, rosewood fingerboard,
mm-hmm,
and the maple top, the flame maple top. The difference is, like I say, all of my guitars are handmade. So the neck angle is a little bit different on this guitar. I tried a steeper neck angle.
Yeah, I noticed that it tilts more and the bridge is up higher.
Yeah, that's just to bring the guitar around on Ronnie a little easier. He's got problems with his shoulder and kind of...
Everywhere.
Make it easier for him to play the guitar.
But you know, the one thing I like about this guitar too, from the first model you had and this one, is that it just blends into your body. It's not real. It's like totally connected. Not where you're like riding the guitar.
Now, does this guitar have more tilt in the neck than his other one?
Yes.
Okay. Because I noticed that the bridge.
It's got an extra fret too. For what, I don't know, but
yeah.
I'll tell you what that note is later on.
So when you bend once in a while, you have a little extra room.
Yeah, there you go.
I know you do it once a year, but it's like...
Yeah.
And then what pickup does he have in there?
That's an EMG 91 that's known as the Ron Ashtay pickup. Yeah.
And you should tell him that years story,
ago,
too.
Yeah, 35 years ago, Rob Turner at EMG was making pickups, and he used to work in my amplifiers.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I brought him in... old tube amp, he'd pull a bunch of wires, I'd throw it on the floor, and I'd come back the next day and it sounded four times better than when I left it with him. You know, Rob's like an electronic genius. But anyway, we were trying to, we were using different pickups and stuff, and we ended up with this. So I was the, you know, he was the genius and I was the testing ground.
Yeah, he did. He helped develop that set,
so,
EMG.
You know, what do you like about this? Is it too much highs? Is it too much lows? You know, we went through, like, you know, balancing the B string and the E string.
Mm-hmm.
And since there's no, you have to do that up front because there's no, you know.
Pole pieces.
Pole
mm-hmm.
pieces,
mm-hmm.
thank you. You know. But I don't know. He says the neck is, it's a different angle. I guess it is, but I.
Only by a degree or so.
I have just as much, I play the other one. I like it just as much. I kind of hate them both the same, you know?
Yeah.
Now, is this is active?
Yes, it
yeah,
is.
It is active. So you have a battery on there. And it's just the one pickup, right? There's no
yes.
piezo element in there.
Yeah, I use a... now, I'll get to the strings in a minute because I want to jump in on that one.
Okay.
I use a real clean pickup. It's a real clean pickup.
The clarity's amazing.
Yeah. And I use a very... clean amplifier, Evans, you know, 300 watt,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the strings now, you know, and this is for the seven, I'm doing this for the seven string guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
The EMG pickup helps a lot, but string sets, everybody says you play seven string and you got to put an 80 for your seven string or something. You don't need that. Not with the new electronics and the new amps, and things have come a long way. Since this guitar was made in 1937, George Van Epps designed this guitar, seven-string guitar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not to a B, but to an A, a regular six-string guitar with an A below. So that's the first problem I heard. I hear guys play, and I'm not mentioning any names, so nobody can get a bug with me. But I hear, you know, the guys play, and all the other strings sound, and all of a sudden, you hear this big string. Well, I didn't want that. In other words, I wanted to sound, you know, it's got to sound like a guitar. I'm not playing the bass. I play the bass sometimes. You know, but still, it has to sound like a guitar string. So what I'm doing is, I'm doing what you're doing, except more to extreme.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I have a 13 and a half
mm-hmm.
for my first string, and the second one's like a 16, and Bo's a plain. So it serves a double purpose.
Well, what's your gauges? Give us the gauges.
That's what I just gave you. A 13 and a half and a 16.
For the top two, but I mean all the way down. Go.
I will. Okay. But there's more to explain than that. And those are plain. The next three strings are flat wounds, 22, 30, 40. Okay? And then the next string after that is a 50 bright flat. And see, now GHS, you can order any kind of strings and variations you want. So that's what I did years ago. I just kept ordering strings and using different ones. I used the nickel ones for a while. I used all round wounds. I used all flat wounds. I did a whole bunch of, and this is what I came up with. So you got two plain and then three flats and then this 50, which is an E string, which is not a big string. That's what they call a bright flat. So it's closer to a wound string.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last string is only a 70 for the A, and that's a full wound string. And it's the biggest guitar string that GHS makes. So you don't need an extra, you know, a different kind of hookup for the string setup on it.
Okay, so that last one is a round wound.
Yeah.
We call it
what they call a boomer.
A boomer.
Those who are taking notes at home.
Okay.
So two plain, three flat, one bright flat, and one boomer, you know, as you go down. But what you in... See, so I get a...
No, it's amazingly balanced.
It's
through
not
the whole...
6+1,
Yeah, but I mean, it's consistent. I mean, there's you know, when you get to the D string or whatever, there's a little more oomph in it because it's a lower string. But for the most part, it's well balanced. It doesn't get real. There's not a difference, like you said. It doesn't sound like a bass string. Like all of a sudden, it's like booming away.
Well, you know, the other guitar, this one, I'm still beating on. You know, this one, I got to beat her into submission.
But that's the same. You're using the same EMG pickup on both guitars, right?
Yeah, but I mean, every guitar is a break. It's a brand new guitar,
right?
So I'm still working on moving things around and stuff like that with CB, of course.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago when Ronnie told me about that, we were talking about 7 strings, and then somehow I said, well, what gauges are you using? But it's amazing because it's really not a 6 string with the 7th string, like he said. It's so balanced that it's just one 7 string instrument. And when you actually play that too, you just realize that it's not like that huge bottom drop or, you know, and it's perfect. It was a brilliant thing you came up with to just have it balanced, you know.
Yeah.
Do you do that too?
I do, because he told me about it. So
on your 7 string, you do the same thing.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's really balanced, and that EMG just is, it's perfect for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does
make
a difference.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you for not mentioning my name earlier by using the big, heavy 7 string on it. I'm not going to mention any names, but it did hurt my feelings.
Well, like I said, it has to be adjusted. Like I said, I always call it beating it to submission. But, you know, just beating on the guitar. And you do. You have to play, you know, have to play strong. You have to play soft. And it comes, you know... It all comes with the territory, you know.
Well, I think another thing you need to bring out is that when Ronnie's playing the 7th string, it's not really a guitar in his hands. It's really, because it's such a harmonic approach, an orchestration approach.
Right.
So all those inner voices, to make them work and actually stand out in the middle, or one on the top not being too loud and the other overpowering each other, to get them all balanced is really... that's the trick to, well, if he were playing just, you know, drop two chords and, you know, in typical guitar grips, but because of all the other lines and things he's using, it starts driving you crazy right. If you don't have a balance.
Well, I know like that you've done and you do the walking bass, because most people think of the seven string as it gives you that extra bass to walk around.
Yeah.
But you actually chord, you know, play more like a traditional guitar where you're chording and you're using the low string not as a bass thing but part of the chord, right?
Yeah, well, like I always said, I'm a frustrated Nelson Riddle Orchestra or piano trio. That's how I've seen the guitar.
So your scale, yeah, it gives you much more versatility skill. But can you demo real quick, like maybe a little chord comping using all of the string?
With a walking bass line or no?
No, without that. Because, I mean, we'll do both. Do one with the walking bass and then show it just
Give me a song. Give me a song.
I'm trying to think of the top of my head.
Oh, Darn That Dream.
Want the seventh string in there?
Yeah.
Now bass line.
So I think what's interesting is that you don't use it. Most people think of that walking bass as the advantage of the seventh string,
yeah.
But you're doing full chord comping, and it gives you that richer sound with the
lower.
Well,
I did with the sixth string before,
right?
And when I went to switch to the seventh string, it wasn't because I wanted to play seventh string like it was a novelty or something. Like I'm going to be the seventh string guitar player. But I've always, of course, George Van Epps was one of my main mentors as far as the guitar goes, and. So I got it because I was doing a lot of gigs with flute, just a flute player, just a saxophone player, trumpet player, vocalist, doing a lot of duos. And I said, man, it would really be nice to have a little bit more low end, not just for them, but for myself, too. So when I'm playing, you know, particularly if you know you're playing it, you can play, you know, like in some of the old open keys, it's really nice. And you can move around.
Well, another thing, too, when I said Darn That Dream, he played it in G. So it actually didn't give him the advantage, which you may not have noticed, but then because he has a guitar down so well, he could start taking, you know, if I would have chosen another key, he would have had all the bottom first, you know.
Yeah.
That's a little tip. I just wanted to add it.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that I wanted to, that
but
I found.
I don't think of it that way anyway.
Right.
Whatever key is in, that's what I play it in.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but that chord comping, that lower note in the chord, not necessarily like a, it's not bass chord, it's the whole chord.
And by the way, I got to correct something. Here, it's really this. It's really a diminished chord.
That's good.
The melody.
Sharp
played,
3 diminished.
I played B flat to E flat just because I was playing the changes, but that chord should be diminished. Thank you, Uncle Mundy. I've been giving you a moment in time.
Ron, thanks for those real book changes in the beginning. I love them. My friend.
Touché, baby. Touché.
It's interesting because, like, I had on the show. I've seen people now, they're you know, playing with different tunings, and one of the things, Paul Richards, he has a tuning that Robert Fripp developed where they actually spread the intervals. So he gets a deeper guitar, more top end. It's a whole different system, but basically doing what you're doing, expanding the tonal fullness, the body of the instrument. So it's, I mean, you're doing it there. I've seen guys using baritones, and I've seen guys with different tunings that have been like the Hawaiian slack key, Jim Kimo West and stuff, doing the same thing, but you're getting it out of the guitar still in a conventional, which is it's fascinating. Now, I want to ask you, Ron, if you can show us, I want to show the inner voice. You were talking about how clear the inner voice is. Can you play something that really shows off the inner voices of the guitar?
That same one.
He's not just playing like the four strings tight. He's got that the lower string. He's playing all the strings.
All of it.
And the clarity is just amazing. I mean, it's really.
Well, that was close.
Close. My idol.
Now that's an ebony board.
That is a rosewood board.
Rosewood board, and it's the back. The neck is.
Neck is mahogany.
Mahogany. Okay.
Now, believe it or not, when CB made this guitar, he knows that for years I've been wanting a rosewood fingerboard, like my old Howard Roberts.
You know,
and a 24.6, like my old Howard Roberts. Yeah.
So you prefer the rosewood over the ebony board?
Oh, absolutely. And nobody do that for you. They got to put their ebony on there because that's the real good wood.
Right.
I ain't buying it.
That's true.
You know.
Well, that's a dark rosewood. I would have thought that was ebony.
I had to buy it before, but now I don't have to because I bought it and it had rosewood on it this time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, it's interesting what you just brought up, too, because I got schooled about 2 years ago. I was sitting there with CB and go, oh, I've had so many guitars, rosewood and ebony. And so I'm thinking, like you, rosewood is always, you know, the lighter color and then the ebony is the black. He goes, no, rosewood can be just as dark or darker. And then he showed me these samples. And yeah.
Wow. I know that they.
Yeah, that's an ebony board there.
And that's a rosewood board.
See, yeah. Look how dark it is.
Where's this rosewood from?
It's Indian rosewood, East Indian rosewood.
No, I know that, like, for example, Deering Banjo has a new line of banjos out that they dyed their black rosewood, their rosewood fingerboard, or black maple, where they stain
it. Really?
And they have both rosewood and ebony boards, too, but I've never seen it naturally like that. I would have thought that was ebony if I looked at it.
I want to ask CB something about, you know, the two guitars he made for me.
Right.
One of them goes up to D flat, and this one goes all the way up to D. And you had said when I went up there that, you know, of course the angle was just a little bit different, but you said it involved mathematics, you know, like making the neck involve mathematics. I wondered maybe if you could tell me
about
that.
What's the formula for dividing the neck up in the frets?
Is it a different division because there's another fret, or?
Excuse me. No, the sequence that the frets lay out is just a mathematical sequence that was worked out hundreds of years ago. The only reason that has an extra fret on it is because I forgot and put an extra fret on it.
Oh, you forgot. I tell you a funny story. The first time I went, the first guitar, you will remember this. I get the guitar, you know, he's just finishing it, and I'm looking at it, and I'm so overwhelmed. And I pick up the guitar, and I play a chord, you know. And I look, one chord, and I didn't even let it ring. I said, "What'd you do to the frets?" You know, and he cracked up. He cracked up because I said, "Isn't it the same fret anyway?" He told me it was something. What's the difference in the frets that were on the other guitar and it was on this one? What's you told me like 5/1000ths or something? What was it?
Yeah, the measurement is minimal. These are just a little bit wider, a little bit taller.
Yeah. By thousands?
By thousands, yeah.
And, you know, it shows you how much when you play guitar that you get used to something. And I spotted it and immediately, you know.
But you know, when the frets are higher and bigger, it's screaming at you to bend more.
There you go.
There you go. You got it. You heard it here first.
That's the first time I've heard that.
I found that it's easier, but it's funny.
Well, you keep telling me that to get the larger frets is $250 more. What's that all about? Oh, that's something.
Oh, you pay to play blues.
No. That's your price.
Yeah. I'm going to go home now.
Okay. Chris, concerning the necks, is that a symmetrical or asymmetrical neck? Have you experimented with asymmetrical or any opinions?
Yeah, I've experimented with the asymmetrical. You talk about the shape of the back of the neck, either a C shape or a U shape or a V. Yeah, I've experimented with that before, but this is a pretty consistent neck.
In general, you find most of the guitars that you're making they're symmetrical.
Yeah,
they're symmetrical. And then also too, let's talk about the heels, because each of these guitars have different. Now the way let's talk about Ron's.
Hey, watch your language.
That was a cheap shot.
The some of the heels are there's no heel, or how would you describe Ron's? The bat.
That's just to give him more access up the neck, easier access. So it's a small heel. Mm-hmm. And like I say, all of my guitars are handmade. I use very few patterns.
Mm-hmm. There's no heel. I'm the heel.
I'm not particularly wedded to anything that I do.
Well, how would you describe this baritone 12-string?
That's a neck through design, and I just shaped the heel so that it would be comfortable in your hand as you went up past the.
So that's still considered a heel, but it's kind of smooth. It's a smooth transition.
Yeah,
I would normally think that was like no heel, so to speak. Yeah. And then what about the clipper?
Well, you know, generally the shape of the heel comes from Arco instruments again, mm-hmm. bass, cello, violin, and those are unfretted instruments. So the shape of the heel of the neck is a reference point for the player mm-hmm. to know where they're playing the instrument. So essentially, I shape the heel that same way. When you put your hand up here, like on the clipper, you're at F.
Mm-hmm.
It just really depends on the guitar.
Now, it's kind of a... Compared to like some of the older guitars, like some of the older Gibsons and stuff, it's a flat heel.
Right.
Right. And you find that's better in terms in general for access? Is that a better, easier to access?
I think a lot of the times the shapes that you see on the manufactured guitars are just what the machines will allow them to make.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, my stuff is done with a knife and a spoke shave.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. I'm going the wrong way. I zoomed in to get Chris's guitar. Now I've got to zoom out to get you.
I'm all the way up at the top. And you notice I moved into it.
And you have a flat. It's flat, too, even though it's a smaller
one. I moved into thumb position, but I don't have to. It's so many years of playing, you know, other guitars that would have no access.
Right. Where you had to reach over the top of the guitar.
Where I had to reach over the top of the guitar. And sometimes I still do that, but I can play, you know, up and... And she tracks, too, all the way up.
Well, I noticed there's no dead spots at all, and the access, he can hit all the way up to the top fret. It's easy, it's very easy to play.
Well, you know, the other thing too is Jeff, if you touch that guitar, the neck on it, the action is very low, and it mm-hmm. rings out like crazy, but really great action, you know.
Well, all of these guitars are really
they're
really low, and they play for me. I like a little bit of a lower action, even with the higher frets. They play really well.
That's 25 years of repair work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
I get to see everybody else's sins.
Now the arch tops. Do you angle? Are you angling more now, or you just did it for Ron's guitar? Are you finding it's
actually,
better?
Actually, I have been experimenting with kicking the neck angle back and setting it deeper in the pocket, deeper in the neck, and putting more tension on the bridge between the tailpiece and the neck.
Mm-hmm. It should give you more sustain, right?
It puts more pressure on the top. I think it.
But the angle going on the bridge from the tailpiece to, if that's...
Yeah, it's putting more even pressure on the bridge.
Okay.
And instead of the bridge, in my mind of the way that a bridge vibrates on the top of a guitar, not going in one direction more than the other. It's mm-hmm. more free to move around mm-hmm. in all the directions that a bridge vibrates.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll have to play this before.
We'll take a picture and I'll noodle on it.
Yeah, you know, get up on the axis and see what
right.
I'm talking. Because it's great. I mean, the first time I played the other ones the same way. You know, I played and I went like.
Well, I tried that arch top there, and that's just beautiful.
Thank you.
But the one of the things I wanted to ask on the solid bodies, I do this on my Fenders, is I shim the neck. Because it's a bolt-on to tilt it more, so that I bring the bridge up higher and I get a more even string height across the fretboard. I find it usually I can get a little bit higher nut and then I can keep it even, as opposed to lower at the close to the nut and then higher at the end. Do you find yourself have you tried more tilting in the solid bodies, the bolt-ons? Can you do or have you played with that, or do you shim it, or do you do anything like that?
Well, only if it's necessary to get the strings up off of the body. Most of the time, I set the guitar up to the preferences of the player.
Okay.
And everybody does have their own preferences. They do have their own preferences.
But I noticed on some of your guitars, you have like Tune-O-Matic bridges on the solid bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I have a Tele that has a Bigsby on it, and it has the Tune-O-Matic, so we had to tilt it more because it sticks up. I mean, you can't, unless you, I know some people that route the Tune-O-Matic bridge. But like on those guitars where you have like a Tune-O-Matic bridge on the solid body, do you have more angle?
Yeah, when I make a guitar specifically for like a Bigsby, I'm making a couple of guitars right now with Bigsbys on them. The neck pocket is cut with an angle in it.
Okay.
So that you have the proper break angle behind the bridge to the Bigsby mm-hmm. so that your strings aren't popping off.
Right. Because, yeah. I mean, this guitar, that Ron's guitar, I love that angle. I think I know it's a little more extreme than what you see on a lot of guitars,
mm-hmm.
but even on an electric solid body, I find it's easier to play in general. It's more comfortable, and it's more effortless to play. So it's interesting. I told you it'd go by real fast. We're already out of time.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to mention real quick, www.cbhillguitars.com. Check it out. You'll be amazed at some of the guitars. The woods are just beautiful. And you'll see the Ron Eshte model there, too. And www.ronechte.com. You can hear what's coming up for you. Any gigs?
I'm working around town and a few things going on. And next Sunday, I'm playing at Malarkey's with Luther on bass and Ramon Bondas playing drums.
Oh, very cool. Very, very
cool. There in Long Beach, you know. And let's see, Friday, I work at a lot of different places.
So you're playing all places.
I've played around.
Yeah, that's true. You don't. You could work a lot more if you had a better attitude.
And then also, less
you know it's coming.
Unless you can get a hold of it at www.thedeliberatemusician.com.
Absolutely.
And that's a great. I recommend the book, your wife's DVD. Even though it's meant for children, it really says a lot for adults too. It's really a great thing in terms of learning how to listen to other people and interact with musicians, and also in general just to program yourself to a more positive way to be more productive.
He wrote it deliberately too.
There you go.
You know, one thing I wanted to say though, he's so dedicated to the guitar that this is his wedding anniversary today.
Well, happy anniversary. That's
Thank
a
you.
That's
yes,
great.
CB, happy anniversary.
So what, 2 years now? How long has it been?
32 years.
Yeah. Wow.
I love you, Teresa.
Love you, Teresa. Oh, wait.
Love you, Teresa. Whoa.
Yikes.
Well, anyway, everybody, thank you so much for coming on. Do you want to take us out? Ron, do you want to take maybe like something for like 30 seconds to a minute to take us out?
All right. If I can get this strap on in 30 seconds, I will.
Everybody have a great week. I'm going to mute all the mics so you just hear Ron's guitar, and I'm going to turn up the microphone so you can hear this amp, so you can hear what's going on. But thank you, guys. Thank you so much, Chris. Okay, here we go. This is Ron.
Gone with the Wind.
You guys are my rock stars. They come and hang out at the shop about twice a month, and I have a good time with them.
Plus, the thing I like, he feeds us, and, you know, we get to gives us some clothes and all.
It's amazing.
There's coffee.
It's amazing.